Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Today on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we have got a terrific lineup of guests. First, we head to Bloomington to talk with Chef Dan Nichols of Bigwood Brewing Company's Quaffon Tap House. Chef Nichols recently won the James Beard Foundation's Better Burger Contest, and we'll hear about how the Bloomington chef won the national contest, one that will send the chef to the Beard House in New York City. We'll also hear from 11-year-old Sabrina Richard of Indianapolis, who is currently appearing on Rachel Ray's Kids Cook-Off on the Food Network. We talked with Sabrina last week here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and this week she takes on our Cook This Challenge. We'll also hear from Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College about his new cookbook. And we'll talk to new restaurateur Brian Baker, who's opening a South American-inspired restaurant and coffee shop in Indianapolis. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, I know it's not quite fall yet, but here in Central Indiana, we are definitely heading into fall festival season, and I just have to mention a few of them. Just on this weekend alone, you'll find plenty of food and drink-related festivals and events. Today, for example, is Pinrod, an art, music, and food event that takes place at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. The festival, dubbed Indiana's Nicest Day, is going on today on the museum grounds until 5 p.m. Turn Festival, which we heard about last week here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, also is happening today at the Paramount School for Excellence in Indianapolis. It focuses on sustainability, and the free festival takes place on the school's urban farm at 3020 Noland Avenue in Indianapolis. Canvitational, Sun King Brewing Company's third annual craft beer festival, takes place on Georgia Street in downtown Indianapolis today. More than 50 craft breweries from across the country will be pouring samples. And if you want to enjoy the fall weather and soak up a little Southern Indiana scenery as well, the Hoosier Hops and Harvest Craft Beer Festival is happening today at the Story Inn in Brown County. And finally, one of my favorites, the French Market at St. Joan of Arc Catholic Church in Indianapolis is going on today. That free festival is definitely a popular one and features lots of great French food like quiche, escargot, French onion soup, etouffee, and plenty of pastries and desserts. That festival continues until 10 p.m. today with live music as well. So for more on all the great events happening in and around the area, be sure to check out visitindy.com and aroundindy.com. Bloomington chef Dan Nichols of Bigwood's Brewing Company's Quaffon Tap House has become well known for the tap house's creative menu. But the chef's food is also getting national attention, all due to a burger. Chef Nichols recently won the James Beard Foundation's Better Burger Contest, which challenged chefs across the country to create a healthier, more sustainable burger by incorporating mushrooms into the ground meat. The contest called for burger fans to post on social media, and the Quaffon burger was far and away the winner, which means that Chef Nichols will be heading to New York next month to prepare his burger at the James Beard House. I caught up with the busy chef at Quaffon recently to try the burger, which is delicious, by the way, to check out the menu and the award-winning craft beer, and to find out how it all happened. Tell me a little bit about the Better Burger Contest and how you got involved in that.
Okay, well, I belong to the James Beard Foundation, and so I get all the update emails from them, and they had sent out the announcement that they were going to launch this national project with the National Mushroom Council, and it really just intrigued me. I thought it was really unique, this idea of blending mushrooms and meat and still trying to create a hamburger, which, I mean, as someone who knows food, you know that there's a little bit of a challenge built into just the idea that I'm going to build a hamburger and I'm going to grill it, but it's made with 25% mushrooms. So
now, what was the goal of that?
The goal of the project itself was to create a healthier, more sustainable food product. You know, that if you follow food right now, they're projecting that within the next 10 to 15 years that the farms may not even be able to generate enough protein to handle the increase in the population. So I think it's forest for the trees stuff. We're trying to react as food people to be able to accommodate that demand.
Now, how did you go about building a better burger with the mushroom?
Well, 13 burgers later, it was really just a trial and error. At first, it had nothing to do with flavor profile. It was trying to find texture and the ability to hold it together. So we worked with different styles of mushrooms. I didn't want to use any fillers, typically like a breadcrumb or an egg base to bind it together. And I had remembered doing a rack of lamb in a previous restaurant that I used porcini mushroom powder to rub it with. So I got my hands on a lot of porcini mushroom powder, and I used it as the filler, and it worked. So it was just finding that right amount, so it just didn't taste like you were eating a mushroom burger. That was the other challenge.
Right, and then we talked about how it's not like a meatloaf either. You know, when you talk about binding it together, it's not like that.
Right, we wanted to stay away from that density. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love meatloaf as much as anybody in a sandwich or on a plate. But this was a burger, so we wanted to make sure that we retained the integrity of a hamburger.
So describe the burger a little bit to me, this award-winning burger.
Okay. So the burger is, it's a 75% blend of red protein, which is 50% sirloin, 25% chuck, 25% short rib. Then the balance of that weight includes smoked paprika, granulated garlic, roasted green chilies, pimentos, cremini mushrooms, and porcini mushroom powder. The cremini mushrooms are turned into a mushroom duxelle so that we can cook as much liquid out as we can, and then we let it air dry for 24 hours to get as much liquid out as we can before we blend it all into the burger by hand.
That's a lot of ingredients.
We had no idea it was going to be so popular. I might have decided on something a little bit less complex.
But now tell me just how popular it was. It won the Better Burger Contest from competitors across the country, and that involved people voting for your burger by way of social media, right?
That's correct. The kicker was you had to, everything was decided based upon Instagram posts. So we had to create an account on Instagram for Quaffon, and then once the guests would come in, we would present them with the burger. Then they had to tag the burger on Instagram with a chef account, a Quaffon account, and a Better Burger Project thing. So it was a process, and I think that we got really lucky being in a college town because people kind of grasped onto that whole technology piece, the social media element, and got excited about it. That, well, you know, as I told you earlier, we sold 512 in the contest, but in reality, during those 62 days, we sold 2,033 hamburgers. So.
2,033 hamburgers in 2 months, right?
That's
a lot of burgers.
That is a lot of burgers. That's a lot of ingredient-filled burgers. So,
and about a quarter of those ended up voting, you know, as votes that were counted toward the contest, right?
That's right. We ended up with 512 posts during that 62 days. So,
and I just have to say that you sort of blew away the competition because the closest one was like at half of that, maybe, right?
That is correct. 202. And again, we were surprised as you are. I mean, when the final results were posted, we were stunned. We had no idea that we had gotten so much support. So
now people have latched onto this burger in a big way, right? So it has become very popular.
Yes, it is our signature sandwich. There's no question about it. We took it off right after the project ended. We took it off. It wasn't ever on the menu. It was a special item. And we took it off the menu, and we immediately had to put it back on due to customer demand. They weren't going to have anything to do with that. So.
Now, you have a chicken version, too, as well. Tell me a little bit about that.
That is correct. So because it did so well, and I really do believe in this idea of a better, more sustainable, healthier product, we know that not everybody eats red meat. So we started to develop, we partnered with Butcher's Block in Bloomington, and we developed a ground chicken version that has breast, thigh, gizzard, and heart. And then within that, we added all of the other ingredients that are incorporated into the Better Burger that we did for the project, and it's been received equally as well. They sell pretty much head-to-head every day now. So, but now you don't have to eat red meat to enjoy a Better Burger.
And it is very burger-like, which is kind of neat, you know?
Correct. Well, you know, because of the cooked mushrooms, it has a color of a burger. It doesn't look like a piece of chicken. And I think that there's so much of that earthly umami flavor because of the mushrooms, again, It tastes like a burger when you eat it, but you are, in fact, eating chicken.
Now, tell me what happens now, because you won this contest. This is a big deal. I mean, you're headed to New York, aren't you?
That's right. The top five chefs from the project are going to be traveling to New York to cook at the James Beard House October 17th, 18th, and 19th for the National Food Conference. We'll be preparing the burger in cocktail format for the welcome reception for everybody coming into town. And I got to tell you, that's probably the best part of this whole thing for me personally.
Now, that's very cool. So you're going to be cooking at the Beard House. And we've heard a lot about this here, you know, with some of our chefs going there this summer. But this is pretty cool, isn't it?
Really cool. And, you know, it's I went out and I watched and I followed all of them when they went to the Beard House. For any chef that truly thinks of this as a craft, it's a true honor to be able to cook in such an iconic place that some of the most famous chefs in the world have stood in those kitchens and prepared food. So, yeah, it's definitely a bucket list item for this chef.
Well, now, also tell me a little bit about Coiffon and Big Woods Brewery and how that has all come about. Here in Bloomington?
Well, we have three locations, two in Nashville and one in here in Bloomington at Coiffon, and we just did groundbreaking in Speedway yesterday, as a matter of fact, for the newest location. We were a brewery first. We brew all our own beers. We had two gold medal winners in the Indiana Brewers Guild this year. We're really proud of that, our Busted Knuckle and our Yellow Dwarf. And I believe that we should be coming to downtown Indianapolis pretty soon as well.
Now, that would be very exciting because clearly people have latched on to this. What do you think is the appeal?
I think it's the total experience. You know, we focus not just on food or beer. We focus on the atmosphere that's created in the decor and the design, as well as the way that our servers interact with the guests. It's kind of more like walking into your house. It's a different feel than some other restaurants, I believe.
And you have a very strong focus, of course, on the craft beer.
That's right. We're craft beer artisans first, and we're restaurants second, to be sure. And, you know, we require all of our front of house staff to have a thorough knowledge of craft beer so that with 24 taps like we have here in Coiffon and Bloomington, you have to know your game. Our taps change every day, sometimes throughout the day, and all of the staff have to be thoroughly knowledgeable in the craft beer industry, the trends, the makeup of the different styles of beers in order to be able to be a part of this great team.
But now tell me a little bit about the food, because this isn't your regular tavern food. It's not your regular pub type of food.
Right. So, yes, we are a tap room, but we really wanted to put a focus on fresh ingredients. I wouldn't go so far as to say we're farm to table, but we do try to locally source products anytime that we can. We stayed away from your traditional barroom food. We don't have fryers in our establishments, and we're really proud of that. We try to cook healthy as much as possible, and we use unique ingredients and combinations so that you can have a unique dining experience that's fun, even though you're in a taproom environment.
We've been talking with Chef Dan Nichols of Coiffon, located at 116 North Grant Street in Bloomington. For more information on the restaurant, go to coiffon.com or find it on Facebook. Well, I don't know about you, but the daily question of what's for dinner can get pretty challenging, which was the inspiration for our Eat Drink Indiana Radio's Cook This segment. How it works is I take a local chef an ingredient, some sort of protein usually, and the chef creates a dish on the spot with whatever ingredients they have on hand, kind of like what you have to do every day at dinner. But this week, the what to make question went to a kid. Local 11-year-old Sabrina Richard, who is currently appearing on Rachel Ray's Kids Cook-Off on the Food Network. So you know that whatever she makes for dinner won't be the typical kid cooking standbys. In fact, Sabrina gets her culinary inspiration from Julia Child and classic French cooking. So it seemed perfectly appropriate to take her duck confit, prepared at Ivy Tech Community College's culinary school, and see how she'd handle it. And as it turns out, duck is one of her favorite ingredients. So what's your first thought when you think duck confit?
French.
Where would you go with that?
Probably something with a lot of herbs and some seasonings and just very flavor-filled.
Okay, so I'll just sort of follow you around and we'll see what you come up with. So what are you looking for in the fridge?
Just some fresh seasonings and herbs I could use, like dill and rosemary. I'm looking for some tomatoes and cucumbers to make a kind of a heated kale chopped salad that I've made before.
This is not the first time we've been in a home kitchen for this. So Chef John Adams had to cook in his mom's kitchen, and actually he got squid that day. So,
squid. Can't even imagine.
So what are you looking for here?
I have some mint left, kind of dried. I also have some oregano here. So I'll just kind of pull off what I got. Not much, but should be enough. So I have thyme, oregano, strawberries, mint, basil. This year I had the joy of eggplant and tomatoes. And also, I always have basil every year.
So the garden went pretty well until it's been kind of dry, and you know, and it's a little tough. So tell me what you have.
So I have some rosemary, baby dill, oregano, and thyme.
And where are you still thinking you're going with this?
I'm going to do a Dijon mustard, white wine, crusted duck, and then I'm going to sear it and then bake it with some olive oil, and I'm going to have a chopped kale salad with it. Okay. So I'm going to do the duck first, and then I'm going to finish off with the salad. I have a lamb recipe that's similar to this one. I don't use white wine, but it is extremely similar, and I call it my herb-crusted lamb, and I serve it with Brussels sprouts and duck bacon. I'm using a dill to give it kind of a grassy flavor to really incorporate with the gaminess of the duck. So my brother got me some Evu, as Rachel would say, from Italy. He brought it all the way back from Italy for me and gave it to me as kind of a Christmas gift. And then I'm just going to let that olive oil heat while I prep the duck. Tablespoon and a half of Dijon mustard. Though I'm the French chef, I use a lot of Italian olive oil. So now I'm just gonna mix it up.
So tell me why you like to work with duck.
Duck is a very French thing, and I took a duck class with my mom, and that's how I got into duck bacon. But I just really liked the kind of gaminess and saltiness of the duck. So you don't have to totally worry about under-seasoning it, but you do have to season it still. So it has a very great flavor, and it's really inspiring to Hoosiers because we're the number one duck place. Butter. Have butter. So I'm going to add a little bit of crushed mint because I love mint. Could you get the salt and pepper? Not very many kids can say that they have their first chef night at the age of 10. So I'm just doing a rough chop to not really take out all the juices of the herbs so it can help moisten that chicken. I mean, the duck. So now I'm just salting and peppering both sides. And then I'm adding my other herbs, the dill and the rosemary. All right, and then I'm about to put them in the pan. Now I'm about to start the chopped kale, and it has mushrooms and duck bacon and cherry tomatoes and cucumbers. I like portobellos because they're a little more of a wild mushroom, so they'll go well with any kind of gamey meat like the duck or... they go well with steaks, I find. And, of course, Julia loves them with steaks, with her beef bourguignon. So now I'm about to go check the duck.
So what are you looking for?
So I'm looking for a nice color on it, a golden-ish brown, a lot like an eggshell. So it's not quite there yet. So now I'm going to add the mushrooms to the pan with some olive oil and, of course, butter. Now in Julia's book, My Life in Paris, she wrote about going to the Le Cordon Bleu cooking school, and she talks about how there was so much butter that it made your heart stop just looking at it.
And so now what do you have?
So now I have the kale, and I'm just chopping off these stems. And I'm just going to give it kind of a rough chop and try to remove as much of the stem as possible.
Okay, so how's the duck looking?
It's looking pretty good. Kind of. But as Julia says, never apologize. No excuses. So the problem is it's sticking a little bit more than I hoped, but Julia never gave up whenever something went wrong in the kitchen. So I'm just going to give it a chop, and I'm going to add it with my mushrooms to wilt. So now I'm going to do tomatoes. So I'm just going to do a handful of tomatoes, just probably a quarter of them. And now I'm going to go check on the duck. So it's getting a nice color on it. It's kind of golden brown. It's a really tender meat, so it seems to be falling apart on me a little bit. But I'll make it work. I'm just going to finish up cutting the tomatoes and then add them to the wilting kale and the cooking mushrooms. And then I'm going to do the cucumber. I'm going to see how the kale is wilting. So the mushrooms are cooking nicely. And I'm just going to add the tomatoes. It gives it just that bright pop of color. And some salt and pepper also. And of course, more butter. Now, we're just going to let those cook together while we chop the cucumber up. So now, we're going to add this and a little bit of lemon juice to the pot. It's got some bright pop of color. So what we're looking for the cucumber is to have a little bit of a golden brown side to it. And we're also going to add some lemon.
So is this a dish that you said, you know, you make it with lamb? Is it something you particularly like?
I like using fresh herbs, one of my favorite ingredients, besides duck bacon. And I just like to use them a lot because they're fresh and they're very French, depending on which ones you use. And you can make anything French. I'm sure you can make a cheeseburger French by adding seasonings. So now I'm going to add the lemon juice. So now we're going to take the lid off. And we're just going to let them all brown together. And add a little bit more salt to help take the water out of the tomatoes.
So what do you think?
Hot. I'm getting that lemony flavor. And I'm going to add a little bit more butter, of course. And I think that it's a really great dish to use. So it can go with anything that has a very bright and colorful presentation.
Seasonal, nice, fresh.
So this is a kale salad and it has tomatoes, cherry tomatoes that are red, and you can add yellow ones too. It has portobello mushrooms, cucumber and kale, and a little bit of lemon. And then all that's been cooked, and then the kale's been wilted, and everything has got a great color on it. Nice golden brown, and the cherry tomatoes really pop. And it's with butter and olive oil, and you pretty much use about a good 5 to 4 tablespoons. And then for the duck, it's rosemary, a little bit of dill, so it gives you that nice grassy flavor. And then some salt, pepper, and then some crushed mint, because I love mint. And then it's mixed with Dijon mustard, white wine, and olive oil. And it's coated with the three liquids, and then with the herbs and the salt and pepper. And then that's just cooked together for about 4 minutes on each side.
And what do you call it?
Herbs Day duck and the Herbs Day duck and the kale salad.
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you very much. It's lovely, too, and smells so good. We've been cooking with 11-year-old Sabrina Richard, a contestant on the Food Network's show, Rachel Ray's Kids Cook-Off. You can tune in Monday at 8 p.m. to see how Sabrina does this week. And you can follow her on Twitter at CookWithSabrina and find her on Facebook. Local chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College and executive director of Dig In has become something of a regular here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio. And this week I am happy to be talking with Tom about his latest cookbook, Cooking Basics, part of the Idiot's Guide series. So even if they haven't done much cooking before now, the book takes readers from the basics to more complicated fare with great recipes and lots of photos. I talked with Tom recently about the basics, his new book, and his cookbook career.
The one I just finished is Idiot's Guide to Cooking Basics, which we'll talk more about, I'm sure. But last year we had Idiot's Guide to Grilling that came out. And then I've also worked with others, one through here at the school and several others as editor or contributing editor.
So this isn't a brand new thing. You kind of have the drill down. So you can get this. Yeah. You can do this because it's a big job, right?
It is a big job. That's why I laugh when you say you got the drill down. I don't think you ever get the drill down. You know, writing everything in 6 weeks usually is what the publisher wants. So in this case, it's 265 pages in 6 weeks of original content. So a lot of writing, a lot of research went into this book.
Wow. Now what's the structure of it? It's a cooking basics. This is a beginning to end. If you can't cook, you'll be able to cook by the end of this book, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So even we start in the beginning with how to pick out your pots and pans, how to pick out knives, what should be in your kitchen. So, you know, just the basics. Some of the questions I hear all the time is, you know, I want to buy this pots and pans set. Would you recommend this or would you recommend that? So all of that is even covered in this book. So the front of it is just, you know, how to keep your kitchen clean so you're not contaminating. And then we get into the basics of breakfast and go into recipes from there. And even in the recipes, there's little nuggets of factoids that will help you become a great cook, even if you don't know anything today.
So where do you start if you don't know anything? You know, you talked about buying the basics. What are some things people should know about purchasing some of the basic cooking stuff?
Yeah. So I think the first rule is you don't have to go to Macy's and spend a lot of money on stuff. The best place is to go to a local restaurant supply place. So Zesco is what I use most of the time here. And, you know, buy a good pot and pan set. You're going to pay half as much as if you go to a department store and buy something that's fancy and, you know, covered with some enamel or whatever it is, and which you really don't need. If you're cooking with right techniques, you're not going to have stuff that's sticking to those pots and pans.
And, you know, and it doesn't have to have some famous chef's name on it either, right?
Yeah, you're paying for the chef's name, obviously. The advertising promotion that goes around it. So, yeah, just need a big, heavy pan, you know. Think about your grandmother can that cast iron skillet around. That's what you want. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything fancy.
So people can start with the very basics. They don't have to trick out their kitchen, you know, with all the fancy stuff. But from there, where do they start? What kind of recipes, you know, do you encourage people to get going on?
Yeah. So each of the chapters in the cookbook actually start with the basic recipe of whatever that is and then builds from there. So, you know, it might be a basic saute recipe. So, you know, how do you cook a basic veal scallopini or whatever, which sounds fancy, but it's just a matter of sauteing something pretty quickly in hot oil, hot pan, and then kind of build up into the more detailed and elaborate with sauces and such. So, you know, in this book, it's great so that you can gain that basic knowledge and then build on that basic knowledge to make things more elaborate.
What are some of the techniques that you go over? You know, we hear the chefs on TV, you know, maybe mentioning, you know, do this and do this and do this. And sometimes maybe people might not have the idea of exactly what it means when they're talking about sweating the onions or something.
Sure. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So, you know, we talk about basic techniques, and those would be saute, grill, broil, deep fry, braise, simmer. There's seven basic techniques. And we go through those actually in the book as those basic techniques. So once you get those basic things, you can do anything in the world. So, you know, people are envious a lot of times of chefs who can just grab something and make something with it. Well, if you know those seven techniques, you can literally do that. You can look and see what's in your fridge and say, oh yeah, that's going to be great for a saute or a grill, and just go do it because you know the basic techniques involved.
From those basics, where does the book take readers?
So this goes into the basics and then goes into more details with sauces and elaborate components that go with the dish. And this is, you know, it's a basic cookbook. And at the culinary school, this is the recipes that you would use in that very first class that all of our students are going through. So it's, you know, basic enough, but yet elaborate enough to build on and become more proficient in what you do.
Tell me a little bit about the actual writing of the book, you know, how long it took and how you actually choose those recipes to represent the different techniques you're trying to get across.
So working with the publisher on this, it was almost a bargaining process. So we start with knowing exactly number of pages or spreads that are needed in the book. And then we go through and each page say, okay, that's going to be this and that's going to be this. And so literally you start with a page number and you try to work towards that page number based on, you know, how many recipes you want to get in the book or how much content you want to have in the front of it to talk about the you know, kitchen stuff and techniques. So we went through and, you know, when we started out this book with all the recipes that we want to put in there, is over 300 pages. And so, you know, it was, okay, if we have to cut a recipe, which one are we going to cut? If we want to go more elaborate into something, then it's going to take another page. And so it's not necessarily an easy process. So once you have that page numbers down, then you start to write to those page numbers. This one was particularly difficult because it happened between Thanksgiving and Christmas, or Thanksgiving and New Year, really. So it was a six-week period. So in the middle of being a chef during the holidays, is also writing a book during the middle of the holidays. I think my significant other was definitely going to kill me. And so if you think, you know, being a chef, nobody wants to host us for Thanksgiving or Christmas. So we always host the family for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Well, sure, because no one's going to cook for you, right? You're going to be the one cooking for everybody else.
Right.
On top of it all.
So in this case, she was cooking for everybody else and glaring at me a little bit, but understandably so. But with her help, actually, you know, it was done. It definitely was a family kind of a book that we had to write here.
Now, how many recipes are in it and how many photographs? I mean, you have a lot of photos in there.
Yeah, Gabby Chica did a great job with the photography for this book. So there are several hundred, I would guess, between 400 and 500 pictures in this book. Most of the recipes have pictures that have step-by-step pictures in them. So you can see what it looks like during each of the steps. And the number of recipes, I don't know.
It's a lot. Yeah. I mean, you have, and so tell me again, you know, the kind of the sections that it goes over as far as how the book is divided.
Sure. So you start off with the basics of, you know, what's in the kitchen, the basic techniques. Then we start looking at breakfast materials, breakfast recipes, sauces, condiments. The next section will be soups and stews. We have salads. Then we go into the different protein types, so the beef and the pork, the poultry, the seafood. And then we look at starches a little bit with pastas and grains, and then potatoes and beans. And then finally ending, like we always do in the Midwest, with vegetables. So, you know, it is truly broken down section by section with between 5 and 10 recipes in each section that really go into, you know, how to take care of all these things we're cooking.
That's a lot of detail. Now, do you find people want to know? I mean, there has really been such a resurgence of interest in cooking at home. So people want to know how to do this.
Yeah, and the resurgence is a big thing because it's been a generation and a half, almost two generations, since we've done a lot of cooking in the home. The most people think about cooking is when they're actually watching the Food Network, not actually cooking. So this book is laid out so that people who didn't have a role model cooking in the home could actually pick up the book and actually start to learn from the process in the book and learn how to cook.
Now, what are some of your key recipes in there? Do you have particular favorites? You know, these are the ones that you just love, or is there a dish that you don't care if you ever make again?
That's a really good question. Jolene, you've talked about this before with different things that people have to know how to cook. If there's one thing that people know how to cook, they should know this. So, you know, a lot of those are in here for me. For me, eggs, you know, first thing, how do you cook an over easy egg? Which so many people, I hate going to restaurants for breakfast who aren't really good at this because you always, I like the over easy egg and it always gets burnt, right? For me. But also, for me, the defining how good a person is how well they cook fried chicken.
Now, that's a good one. That's a key thing that people might not be familiar with these days.
Yeah, so it's so easy to overcook fried chicken and have that dry, mushy chicken where the crust just falls off of it. And so in the book, we go into detail about, you know, how to make sure it's still moist and make sure that crust doesn't fall off. The little tips and tricks from the trade that are in this book.
Now, is there anything that you don't particularly like to cook? Some things that aren't the favorite?
Yeah, so for me, it's mayonnaise. Which
that's kind of funny. That's a very chefy thing to make, though, right?
Right. I mean, we make mayonnaise from scratch every day here, and use it. And it's actually in the book. The recipe for the mayonnaise is in the book. Very easy to make, but boyhood experience with mayonnaise and not so good of a stomach and makes it so I don't want to eat mayonnaise ever again. But, you know, I could be teaching a soups class or a socks class and they have to make mayonnaise. So I may have 16 students bringing me their mayonnaise to taste every day. And so that gets a little overwhelming tasting those mayonnaises when you know you don't like them to begin with. But yeah, mayonnaise is the thing. If I didn't have to do it again, I would never do it. And I would encourage people to learn how to do without mayonnaise the rest of their life.
Well, now I do want to ask, the one thing that I'm kind of interested in is the sauce section. You know, because I think that is one of the things that separates home cooking from restaurant cooking. And it might be one of those reasons why people at home just can't get those flavors that they get out in restaurants. So tell me just a little bit about the sauces section. I'm kind of into that these days.
Sure. Yeah. In the beginning of the sauces section, we talk about making the stock, the foundation of those sauces. And so if you start with a really good stock, that's when you're going to have those good sauces. Unfortunately, I think, again, you know, people will buy those convenience bases and think that that's going to be a good substitute. That might be a helpful little flavoring ingredient, but it's not a substitute for a real stock. So, you know, definitely teaching people how to pick out the right bones and, you know, how to simmer it a long time to be able to get the right flavor out of it. It's a real process of several days to make a really good sauce, you know, and my family, when they're over for Thanksgiving, as we were just talking about, always rave about that turkey gravy. The thing they don't realize is really it took 3 days to make that turkey gravy of first of all, taking those bones and, you know, roast them a little bit and put them in the broth and let that broth simmer overnight. And then the next day, you know, letting that stock just simmer down into just this incredible, rich, flavorful ingredient. It's pretty amazing.
That's what people want.
Yes.
You know, that really is.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a soup snob. So, yeah, I mean, you've got to get that foundation right to be able to make your sauces and your soups right. And it starts with the water. You know, the people, you know, it's the main thing in any soup, sauce, stock is that water. So making sure that you're not just using some generic tap water that, it, you know, that doesn't have the chemicals in it that a lot of municipalities put in it now. So it might be taking it through a Brita filter or, you know, something else to be able to get some of those chemicals out. But, you know, leave that good water flavor, which sounds funny.
We've been talking with Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College and the author of Cooking Basics. You can find the book at local bookstores and online at sites like Amazon.com. We talk a lot here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio about all the new restaurants that continue to open and about all the young entrepreneurs who are finding opportunities here in the food business. One such person is Brian Baker, an Indianapolis native and an IU grad who has recently become immersed in the restaurant business and will be opening Open Society Public House. The restaurant, coffee shop, and wine bar will be located at 49th Street and College Avenue. And I sat down with Brian recently in the new space to find out what led an IU grad who was clearly destined for a business career to switch gears, go to culinary school, and then come home to open his new restaurant. First of all, tell me your background, you know, where you come from as far as Indianapolis and kind of how you get to the point of starting a restaurant.
Food and hosting and hospitality has always been a big part of my family. We never worked in or had a restaurant. My dad and I always kind of made the joke like, oh, one day we will. And that one day we will turned into now.
So you've kind of, everything has kind of led toward this.
It seems 100%. Like my parents are like, they're like, we're kicking ourselves. Like we should have seen this coming all along. We needed to work we needed to realize this young, like at a younger age. But I was like, no, it's fine. It's
what were you going to do? What'd you go to college to do?
I was going to be a suit, more or less a corporate guy. New York finance was where I was going to get into.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, I graduated from Kelly Business School. I've always been interested in starting small businesses. One of my close family friends is Dr. Shelbourne, the Shelbourne Knee Clinic. I was so enthralled by him owning his own business, operating it. My family, my grandfather owned and operated his own business, BMW Construction. My dad tried and worked through a lot of construction companies he owned or was partial owner, et cetera, of.
So you were going to be a business owner of some sort.
Exactly. And so I went to IU, studied entrepreneurship through the Kelly School, and through that was going to parlay that into work in venture capital or private equity work.
So you were going to be wheeling and dealing.
Yes, always. And that's how I love to work. Number crunching, sales, just that business. I love numbers. So, you know, always, and, you know, when you were, like, younger, you know, you always, like, what do you like more? Words, science, numbers. Numbers work for me. And sports and food.
So numbers, sports, and food. You grew up here, went to school, went to high school here, and then college. Right. So then how did you get from, you know, going to go be a wheeling-dealing, suit-wearing kind of guy to working in restaurants?
I was going to play lacrosse in college. I unfortunately had to have hip surgery when I was 19, freshman year of college. And I, you know, that knocked out that dream. And the whole, I mean, lacrosse is, you know, all East Coast. So all of high school, my buddy and I would travel to up and down the East Coast from North Carolina, Delaware, New York, Connecticut, like just all throughout. And so I loved, you know, flying to New York. Oh my God, I just want to stick around here. Please, please, please. My dad's like, you really want to do it before camp? Let's do it after. I was like, okay, no, that's smart. And, you know, I got obsessed with the city. Friends from New York in college, so then I started coming out to New York, and, you know, by sophomore, junior year, I was set. I was like, I'm going nowhere else but New York.
Okay, so you're gonna head to New York. Were you still thinking business at that
yes.
point?
So at the time, I was dating a girl that was born and raised a New Yorker, and, you know, I was out there playing around with her family for, I think I want to make a jump. So then I spent like a day, maybe not even a day, like probably like 20 minutes on this website, found out there was a business diploma in culinary management. So parlay my business degree into management, and that was my entry. And I came home, I can remember clearly, it was December like 23rd, and my mom left the room crying, my dad left the room screaming, like, what are you doing? Why are you turning down the security of a job offer for X? To go be back in school and get paid $9 an hour.
And what was your answer?
I was like, that's what I want to do. My family's always been very, you know, prove a point, you can do whatever you want. Like,
okay, so they came around?
Oh, no, they never doubted it. They were just, like, in shock and awe, like, this is what you were wanting to do. Like, so, like, that whole summer and that whole winter was, you know, interviewing through Kelly, talking with consulting firms the summer before. I worked with an angel investor in town.
So you were clearly set up to go do that.
I had it. I had the offer. I had, like, the plane was there. You know, I was going to go, you know, you're going to just go be, you know, work your way up the corporate ladder. Go crunch numbers for a year, year and a half. Get in the field for experience for a year, year and a half. Go get your MBA, come back, and then get put into a firm and, you know, climb the ladder.
So it was all planned out.
It was all planned out until Brian ran his mouth and and was able to, you know, find a culinary school to go to.
So then you went to culinary school.
Yeah.
And
so I moved out to New York, culinary school. I got an internship at a food website called The Daily Meal. I was writing for them. And then I got a job at a three-way type restaurant. They had a taco truck, a catering program. Well, they were literally called the taco truck. They had a truck, they had a catering program, and then they had a brick-and-mortar location. You know, I went quickly from dishwasher prep cook to being a key figure for them running their lines.
So it's not as surprising as it might seem.
No. There was a clear path. If you could project it, like, if you look back and, like, lined up, you know, like, if you plotted the graph, it was, like, clearly all trends reporting towards food, 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 food.
So now, how does this all lead to opening a restaurant, coffee shop, wine bar in South Broad Ripple?
We'll go through the whole trend.
Yeah, how did it happen?
My management professor was the wine director at the school. And he was like, he brought wine whenever he could to the management classes just to taste us, blah, blah, blah. So my experience with wine in college, like that fine wine in college, and then him teaching me beverage, like, hooked me. One of the first days in the culinary school, we had an opportunity, Dallas Brothers Roasting is I wouldn't say as, they're an older, very well older established business in there, in New York, and roasting. And they came through and did a cupping. And I was just blown away that you could pull different flavors from coffee. I had gone to Costa Rica when I was 19, spent a summer down there. Another reason why I love Latin food is because I can remember those meals, the best meal of my life I can vividly remember down there.
Tell me again how you came up with the name of the new
place.
So
Open Society, I can't tell you how I came across Open Society in like a specific instant, but it's a philosophy. It was anti-authoritative figures, literally by my judgment is anti-Nazi movement. So instead of a monoculture, it was a multiculture, multi-religion, multi-belief.
So it resonated with you.
Yeah. Oh, and it was huge. So the biggest thing about it is one of my favorite quotes is, if you haven't been there before, you can't imagine how it feels. And if you have, you can't imagine how it doesn't. So that was huge. With Open Society, their whole thing is, you know, growth, always growing, always learning. Don't ever hold somebody back to, you know, let them explore their full expression of themselves. And you do that through gaining knowledge.
Now tell me how that's going to translate to a restaurant.
So this is my exploration of myself, my exploration of my journey to where I want to be. I'm not bashful to say that I want to be the highest rated restaurant, so I want to be, you know, but it's not for the awards, it's not for the recognition, it's for the acceptance wouldn't be the good word. The
satisfaction,
but I'm more saying it's like the execution. To be able to be, you know, judged on the highest level and be put against the best restaurants, the best chefs in the world. That's just my ambition. I want to be the neighborhood restaurant that supplies, you know, Jill, who comes down for coffee and breakfast every morning. I want to be the one that comes when, you know, James comes home from working out at 7 o'clock, he always swings through and picks up a plate of food for me. I want to be that concept, but then I also want to, you know, that's the beauty of Open Society, is we have a very strong community-based affordable approach to it, but we have the ability and know-how to scale up.
Now tell me, describe the food a little bit. Tell me, you know, the idea of how all these kinds of flavors are going to come together.
Acid, herbs, and fire are a big basis of flavor for me. So like charred, by standards, like one of my favorite chefs, Francis Millman, he calls it burnt. Like his, literally is like one of his recipes is burnt carrots with goat cheese and almonds. Like that's like, he just doesn't bash about it. And I love because it's a caramelization of the sugars when you get something that charred, or when you start to brown something, it's caramelizing, pulls out sugar, pulls out deeper flavors. And I really love that. Acid, I love light, bright, lively. And herbs, I love intense flavors. And herbs have a really strong concentration. So we'll bring that and replicate that through, you know, a variety of flavors. I'm calling it South American because I want to more highlight the styles and techniques than actual ideas behind their flavor or behind their menus. So, you know, Asian influence, we're working instead of like an Asian steam bun where there's crispy pork belly covered in like a soy glaze with fermented black beans, you could do like a Venezuelan black bean and braised red meat with it, or braised beef with it. So, you know, just different styles on the common themes.
When do you see this all coming together? Do you have a target date?
First of the year. There's no doubt in my mind that we won't be open by first of the year. But ideally is based on permitting and construction. We can get the coffee program up and running before Thanksgiving. So a limited menu of coffee in the first of the year, and then open up the full concept at the coffee and small menu before Thanksgiving, full concept first of the year. Yeah.
What do you think of the neighborhood? Do you like the Sobro neighborhood?
It's the perfect balance of young and old, families and singles. When I came back to the city, going around, like, I remember sitting with like a 75-year-old couple at sinking ship, you know, death metals blaring. Like, I'm cool with it. I love, like, my chefs in New York got me really, well, they played death metal. I didn't get into it. I got used to it. So it actually became more of a comfort because I thought of them. But, you know, sitting in sinking ship, hearing death metal, and these, you know, 75-year-old couple just sitting there drinking beer really casually, and you're like, this is what you're cool with? They're like, well, it's the neighborhood bar. They're really nice here, and they never, you know, it's cool. I'm like, it's awesome. You know, and this posting, this having posts, I can't tell you the number of people that have reached out being like, so excited to have you in the neighborhood. We can't wait to be here. I live 40th in this, 50th in that. Like, they're like, we'll walk, we'll be there. It's just, yeah. I mean, I grew up in the neighborhood. I want to help the neighborhood. There's huge, widely successful business opportunities in the neighborhood. So there just never really was a doubt in my mind that I was going anywhere else. And I never wanted, I don't know, downtown's cool and all, but like home isn't downtown, home is here.
We've been talking with local entrepreneur Brian Baker, who will be launching Open Society Public House early next year. To follow the progress of his restaurant, look for Open Society Public House on Facebook. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thanks so much for tuning in to Eat Drink Indiana Radio this week. And thanks also to our guests, Chef Dan Nichols of Quaff On in Bloomington, Sabrina Richard of Rachel Ray's Kids Cook-Off, Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College, and Brian Baker of Open Society Public House. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.